Get ready to get your nerd on.
Kick the week off right with games, gadgets, and general geekery from the ladies of the Electric Sisterhood.
On Tuesdays, get your pop culture news and reviews with a pure Bostonian perspective on the Boston Bastard Brigade.
Geek Aggro is coming at you on Wednesdays to fill what's left of your cerebral cortex with the hottest beats to get you on your feet.
Then on Thursdays, you have me, Phil the Issues Guy, presenting the Live Issues program.
It's going down each week. Only in the land of Ash, nerdcore at its finest.
Hey guys, King Baby Duck here. Welcome to the fifth part of our Anime Boston 2014 interview series. Well, great news, everyone. I was able to fix the Mike McFarlane interview audio, so all of you out there will be able to hear it rather than read it. Because, like I said, I prefer the audio format of interviews instead of written ones since, you know, things in audio are next to impossible to take out of context. So, Mr. Mike McFarlane, some of you will know him as Master Roshi in the Dragon Ball series, Gene Havoc in Fullmetal Alchemist, Haru in Desert Punk, and Goemon in Lupin the Third, the woman called Fujiko Mine. He also voiced the hilarious Origami Kid in the twisted pixel game Comic Jumper, and has worked behind the scenes for the English dub versions of Beck, Mongolian Chop Squad, Mushishi, My Bride is a Mermaid, and Eden of the East, just to name a few, because there are dozens and dozens of series that he has worked on. For this interview, I was joined by my friend 42Believer, GameAndComic.com, and the LFB. So, without further ado, let's get things rolling with this Anime Boston 2014 interview special featuring Mike McFarlane.
What drew me to becoming a voice actor? I was already acting in, I guess, different capacities. I have been on stage since maybe like second or third grade. I laid off of a lot of acting through, I guess, high school, maybe late middle school, early high school, to concentrate more on music. And through the end of high school and through college, I ended up kind of doing both. I ended up with a BFA in music with a concentration in business and a minor in theater, which, strangely enough, I use my BFA for exactly what it is. So the voice acting aspect of it was just another thing to try. I had an audition with Funimation in 1997 for a Dragon Ball project they had, and they heard, I don't know, like 100, 150 people, and myself, Christopher Sabat, Laurie Steele, were three of the people that they picked up that still do stuff today. And I had done some radio and some other things before that, voice acting-wise. And then also prior to my voice acting, I've been heavily involved in improv. So lots of character voices, lots of things of that nature.
I gotta ask this question, it's been running my mind. Do you prefer Wolf Children or Summer Wars?
Oh, that's not nice.
I have to.
I don't know. They're both really good. They're really, really good movies, and I'm also very pleased with how the dub turned out. I don't know. Summer Wars is more epic, and Wolf Children is a little bit more family, and I think Wolf Children might be a little, not necessarily more emotional, but there's just some more intimate moments that there's a lot more opportunities to start happening in Wolf Children, I think. But I think they're both wonderful, and I don't know, it's like, which... Do you like this really, 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 really good pizza or this really, really, really good pizza? You know, that they're like both awesome, so I couldn't pick. It would depend on my mood each day. Like, I like this one. Nope, today I like this one. So they're really neck and neck.
Fair enough, thank you. Mm-hmm.
What's been the favorite project that you've worked on?
It's really hard to pick. I've been super, super fortunate to work on so many cool things. I've been involved with the rebuild of Evangelion. I was a big Evangelion fan anyway, so that's been really awesome. Attack on Titan, we'll be premiering here tomorrow. It's a wonderful, wonderful show. Alchemist and Alchemist Brotherhood, I love both of those. Ones that people may not have seen quite as much, Mushishi, I really enjoy that show. Shiki, which is a very cool vampire show that I'm not sure how many people saw, but it's really cool. One Piece, I love being able to work on that show. I think it's so fun, and as far as shows of that length, I think it's by far the best one. It's my personal favorite anyway. Once you start getting past like episode 100, then One Piece is my favorite. Eden of the East, I can't remember if I've named that one already or not. I love that one too. I've just been really, really lucky. I mean, I've had the opportunity to work on so many really awesome projects. The whole set of films that we mentioned before too, those are just beautiful. So hard for me to pick. I'm just glad that I get the opportunity to work on so many cool things like that.
Yes, a lot of the shows you've worked on, kind of Full Metal, One Piece, Attack on Titan, and the Ava movies, the host of the movies, these are all very big, very popular, very beloved kid anime. So, So on these projects, which one did you feel the most fresh? Like, we need to get this right.
Once again, like the favorites, I do that with everything I work on. I mean, depending on the approach of what it is, I try to do that with everything. And the approach thing I only mentioned, because I haven't had the opportunity to work on something like a Shin-chan or something, so obviously we got to get it right, is we have a very specific goal in mind, and it isn't necessarily what the Japanese did with it. So I haven't had an opportunity to work on something like that. But with all of my projects that I've worked on, I try to keep the intent as close to the original performances, as close to the original everything as possible. I try to research all the names, all the proper nouns, and, you know, make my actors say them properly so we don't have people who are used to the subtitle going, oh, they're saying it with the wrong stress, it's not that syllable, it's this syllable, or it should be no syllable at all because it's in Japanese. All these sorts of things, and to try to make that information flow and sound natural. Same with the casting. I mean, obviously, every director everywhere is going to have certain people that they tend to lean on and rely on because they always do good work for them, but I try to vary up my casts quite a bit. The Titan cast was just announced, and there's several people that have never worked at Funimation before, or this is their first time doing any anime dubbing anywhere. So different things have a different sort of a focus on them, but they always the focus is to put out the best thing possible.
One of your more recent roles had the being of Goemon in the series Lupin the Third, the one called Fushigomine.
Mm-hmm.
As there have been countless others who have portrayed Goemon in past versions, was it at all difficult to bring something new and fresh to a character that we had all grown very familiar with?
The thing with the Fushigomine anime that I thought was fun was that wasn't my first time to play Goemon. I've played Goemon in all the films, the Lupin the Third films. But that series is just so different from all of those that it was a chance to take that character and the voice that I had, you know, that they selected for that character many, many years ago, and shape it around this new environment and this new setting and this new tone. And I had fun with that. I think some of the Lupin stuff, and it's just kind of written into it, some of it's kind of campy and fun and whatever else, and I think the amount of campy and fun that was in Fushigomine was very small. It was just kind of a darker, more interesting, for me anyway, because I like dark material, look at those characters in that franchise. So it was a neat, fun approach of working on that show with that voice and my experience with that character and putting him in not necessarily a new setting, but just like a darker tone setting.
Out of all the anime you've been involved with, if you could just wipe clean everything about it, and go through the process of exploring the characters and the story, which one would you choose?
Huh. So we're clean slating everything. No work has been done on it before. I don't know. Probably either Brotherhood or Titan. It's because there are the leads, and then there are the supporting cast, and the supporting cast of both of those shows are so, you know, extremely important, and they're very well developed. And even if for someone out there is like, oh, they're not that well developed, there's room for them to develop, and they're not just a one note character, you know, a one joke guy or a one whatever person. I think that the supporting cast and the environment and the world of those both of those series are the most fun to explore.
As a director, especially with Attack on Titan, how do you kind of cope with the challenges of having different people recording at different times, and how do you kind of structure your overarching goal of making the anime successful?
It's always my goal upon watching any anime that I've been the voice director or the ADR director on, and when you're watching it back, it should sound fluid, it should sound like you and I having a conversation right now. It shouldn't sound like someone recorded 2 months ago and the other person is now coming in to track. Part of that is having the conversations in my head part of it is having the tone in my head, and thankfully the wonderful seiyus and the original performances are there for to help guide me along as far as what needs to happen, and this is the tone and this is the setting. You know, it's a good guide point for that. I don't always do exactly what they did, because sometimes it just, for technical reasons or for whatever reasons, it doesn't tend to work as well in English. There are certain points in even Brotherhood, for instance, where there's like a lot of explosions, a lot of things going on. It'll do a close-up of the character, and he's talking about this loud. And you just can't do that. The mix guy would send it back, like, you can't whisper this line. In some instances, I've heard recordings where, especially in Japanese, where if everyone's recording like this and there's a whisper line, they'll get in and they'll do it like this. For our purposes, that's like a really bad recording technique, and it takes you out of the environment of everyone is supposed to be in this real world setting. There wouldn't be suddenly just someone whispering in your ear in a real world setting, unless they are right on top of you. So there are just some things that we have to change, but as far as the flow and the way people talk and stuff like that, it's a matter of me communicating with the actors what's going on and trying to be very clear, letting them see the seiyu's performance beforehand. Hopefully we have some other people recorded around them, and if not, I guide them along. I'm like, you're the person setting the tone for this particular scene. You're spearheading it. Softer, please. This, please. That, please. Don't forget that person that you're talking to in the second half of the sentence is way over there. This part is delivered to this person sitting next to you, and then you have to get louder for that person over there. I try to make sure that everything's nice and clear for them, so that when we go back through it, it does sound like it's actually happening.
How much oversight is there from the Japanese companies when you're dubbing? Like, do they give feedback along the way, or are they pretty hands-off and just trust you to...
It depends on the series. Yeah. For most of the time, for most series and projects that I've worked on, all the pre-production, there's a lot of going back and forth with the Japanese license holder. They're very protective of their material, and they should be. You know, they put a lot of time and effort into it, and they want to, you know, they're allowing the rest of the world to know these stories and to see this art and to experience these characters and what they go through. So a lot of the proper nouns, names of things, if there are character quirks, like in One Piece, if there are specific laughs of people and things like that, these all need to be sorted out in advance. They're part of what makes that show fun and cool. Sometimes there is a hands-on in the voice selection process. Sometimes there's not. Sometimes there's two or three different parties involved with that sort of process. It could be myself and the producer and... maybe Gen or someone else at Funimation, plus the license holder, plus the director of the Japanese anime, plus the mangaka. Like, it could be a whole ton of people, or it could be just the people, myself and the producers, etc., etc. It really just depends on the project. But we do have the official materials from them, the final video, all the music and the elements. We get hard copies of the script written in kanji and katakana, so we can go through and do that versus what is being spoken aloud and kind of go back and forth on that. And like, if something's different on the script than what's been spoken out loud, we can follow up on it with the licensor and say, hey, we noticed this is a difference. Is there a reason for that? Like, we try to be very, very thorough up front so that when we open the floodgates and start working on it, that all this is sorted out in advance. Most of the time, once we start working on it, that's when it's up to me to just keep abiding by all of the information that we've been given up front in our pre-production, and just make sure that what is expected of us from the Japanese license holder is upheld throughout.
I know you do a lot of video game work. One of my favorite video games that one of my favorite characters you portrayed in was in a game called Cog Jumper, where you played Origami Kid.
Yes.
And I asked this to Brina Pialanche a couple of years ago, mm-hmm. about working with the guys at Twisted Pixel. How much of when you were working on a game like that, when there's so much comedic material within it, how much did they allow you to go off script, and how much was it more of, you know, following what the script was?
From my recollection, I would say a good 85 to 90% of what I did with the Twisted Pixel guys was in their script. They were very open to letting me try things and letting me do other things. But very fortunately, much like the scripts for Borderlands 2, they were already really funny. Like Anthony Birch's stuff and those scripts were very funny. The Twisted Pixel scripts were very funny already. So it was just a matter of finding the right approach and voice to bring their funny material to life. But I'm sure that I did add a few things here and there because that's just the nature of the beast.
Right.
Does being in an anime and directing at the same time, like in Attack on Titan, mm-hmm. John, and you're also directing it, does that make it easier or harder on you?
I try to, in the instances when I do end up being cast in a project that I'm working on, and all those casting decisions are approved through producers and stuff above me, I don't go, and I just snuck into my own show. Those are all decided on by people who are responsible for my job. I've tried to treat myself as a voice actor the same way and the same level of expectation as anyone else that I have coming in to work for me. I will push myself to get the exact read that I want. Luckily, I already know the read that I want, and I don't have to tell myself because it's all, you know, in the same brain. But I don't sit there and give myself 15, 20 takes of something when it was already really, really good by like take 3 or 4 at the most. Just because I'm obsessing on it. I try not to do that. Most of the actors that I hire get everything in between 1 and 3 takes because they're really, really good voice actors. And people that are newer, that haven't worked in anime before, they have a little bit more leeway. But I've hired them because I have a lot of faith in them, and they grow to be faster and faster and better and better. I have multiple years of experience, so I shouldn't have that same leeway. I should just be getting the job done as if anyone else had hired me. So I try to be equally as critical as all of my other cast, given the experience and stuff. Yeah.
What was your biggest hurdle with Attack on Titan?
Biggest hurdle of Attack on Titan, I would say casting the three leads, the three main leads. Obviously, that show has a lot of people that are very, very important. But when you see the little poster, the three people that are the closest to you, making sure that they were right with the right voices and the right cast involved allowed for all of the other supporting cast and everything else to fall into place.
Is it mostly your decision who voices that?
It was my suggestion. I mean, I took 3 days worth of auditions of hearing someone every 10 minutes for 7 hours a day. And I also had email submissions for the people who lived in New York and Los Angeles and Houston and other places that couldn't make it up for those particular 3 days, including a few Dallas people that just weren't in town for those 3 days. And I listened to those for another day and some change. The entire casting process took about a week to cast all of these roles. And then those were passed along to the producers above me that I mentioned before. I'm like, these are my selections. This is what I think. Here are their audition files if you'd like to hear them. Here are the original Japanese voices. If you want to hear how I'm being this and going back and forth on how my voice selection goes, you know, you have all these things to listen to. So it was that level of thorough and that level of meticulous nature. But I would say the most difficult part was casting those leads. Once that happened, everyone else fell into place around them. I'm like, well, this voice is here and this voice is here, so this character that has this much association with them doesn't need to sound so much like them that if they're off screen, you're not sure who's talking and that sort of thing. And it kind of allowed everyone else to fall into place.
You've done both film acting and voice acting. Mm-hmm. Which do you prefer of the two? Like, what are the respective strengths and weaknesses of the two different jobs? And
let's see, as far as on-screen acting versus voice acting, I don't know which one I prefer. I would say I get a lot more voice acting work than I do on camera work, mostly due to the fact that I'm up directing a lot. So if someone in Studio A wants to hire me for something they're working on, I'm just down the hall in Studio E, and they can work around my schedule a lot easier. Or if my agent gets me an audition with someone for a voice acting job, like for a beer company or a sporting goods, something like that, and I book it, I can work with Funimation and like, hey, I need these 2 hours off in the morning, I have to go record this thing, and then I'll come back and I'll direct for the rest of the day, and I can work these 2 other hours out somewhere else and work longer in the evening or something so that they get all of their directing time in. I will say that I can on camera act a lot for a lot longer period of time than I can voice act, because typically when you're doing on camera work, you're doing one scene at a time, or even like one portion of one shot at a time, and every time in between the lights are being set up, everything's being prepared, you have time to memorize your handful of lines for that particular scene. If you haven't done it already, you can work back and forth with the other actor you're going to shoot with, and then you just do that scene over and over from this angle, from that angle, from the wide angle, from the close-up and all that stuff, and then you're done, and then we reset and go to a new location and do a bunch of other stuff. That takes hours. In the same amount of hours, I could have screamed my guts out over and over again playing Baby and Dragon Ball GT or something like that and had a lot of wear and tear on my throat. So I get a lot more work done when I'm voice acting because it's just me over and over and over and over and over again. I can on camera act for a lot longer because it's not that. It's not me over and over and over again. It's a lot of other things going on. I enjoy the interaction and getting to use my full body and my eyes and everything else like that, all my instruments of communication. It's fun to do that in voice act, in on-camera acting. It's also a fun challenge in voice acting to not have any of those things and still try to convey it with the characters that are already drawn. Or in the case of a video game, based off of the character designs, you know, what would this character with this face look like when they yell, or what would they sound like? You know, that's a fun exploration as well.
Back in high school, when my pals and I would talk about Dragon Ball Z, uh-huh. We'd always say that our favorite character is Master Roshi.
Excellent choice.
So, a bit of a two-part question. Uh-huh. How did you get into the mindset of such a character who one moment will be like the wisest person in the room, and the next moment, the complete opposite?
That was a fun challenge. That was one of my first big voice acting roles. When I had my first audition for Funimation, I was cast as Master Roshi and as this totally obvious good guy character named Count Lucifer and an army commander and some other side bits because the pool was very small. I wasn't the first ever acting pool that they had for Texas, so I played a few roles in this one film project. With that particular movie, I think the amount of being serious was small. So it was mostly the big, loud, kooky nosebleed or scared or frightened, you know, however you want to say it, those sorts of moments. From there, we were already recording Dragon Ball Z, so I recorded a lot of Dragon Ball Z before we ever went to Dragon Ball. Dragon Ball Z, it seems like Master Roshi's main thing is to be the comedic relief. He does have some mentoring, and he does have some other things going on, but mostly he's there to point out breasts and to have nosebleeds and scream and have fun. It's when you go back to Dragon Ball and he has these big, long speeches about, like, a long time ago on the planet Namek, you know, all these sorts of things that happened. So I had a lot of experience with him being goofy prior to him having to be serious, so I could base it off of that.
I guess the second part of the question is, how did you decide upon the voice to give to Master Roshi?
Most of the time, for Funimation auditions, and we've done this since the beginning, we'll have three or four pictures of the character, and then like a paragraph description of the character. This is Master Roshi. He's a martial arts master. He's also a pervert. He lives in the Kame House on a small island in the middle of nowhere. He has a turtle shell on his back. Etc., etc., and it'll just be all this description about him. And then there'll be lines of dialogue, five or six, you know, Goku, Krillin, go get me a date, Kamehameha, all these sorts of things that you would have to say as part of your audition process. All of that information combined just led me to try that voice out. I mean, that's really about it. Like, you see a character on screen. In this instance, I wasn't played the Japanese track in advance as some sort of guide or whatever. That happened after I booked the part. Like, hey, you naturally had something similar to this that we liked. Let's play off of their performances while providing that voice that you gave us in the audition. So that was more or less it. It's just something I cooked up in my head based off of that information I was given.
Very cool.
During your career, has the way anime is produced and directed evolved in any way?
I believe that it has. I know that you can look at stuff probably about every 3 or 4 years and notice a decent substantial change in the way that the reads are approached, what quote-unquote fits as far as the animation and the flaps, who is used a lot, which actors are used a lot, which directors are used a lot. And I don't think there's ever been a time when we hit a 4-year mark or so and it goes down, at least in my opinion. Probably from around when Mary did the Bebop dub, and I think that was around 99, it seemed that that was kind of a, for those who hadn't already had a wake-up call, that was a wake-up call of like, it must be good. You must try harder. We can't do the early 90s dub stuff, and we can't do the 80s dub stuff. The material is good. You're given this opportunity to continue telling these stories and to tell these stories to a new audience. Do it. Do it well. Take pride in it. And for those who weren't already doing so, it was the wake-up call that I mentioned. And for others, it was the, oh, I never thought about it that way, or I thought we were trying hard, and apparently we're not, because they can make that. You know, they can make something like Cowboy Bebop. I think a lot of distributors in the United States of anime, I don't think they necessarily sit there and look at that particular title. I think a lot of people who work in the industry doing this sort of work do look at that sort of title and say, you know, it can be done, it can be achieved. I know that I take it very, very seriously. I know that I put a lot of time and efforts into making it be the best that I feel that it could be. With this latest project, Attack on Titan, that I worked on, I had a lot of out-of-town talent come in for me, a lot of different people, so that it wouldn't just sound like the same 15, 20, 30 people that work on every Funimation show. I wanted it to have its own voice and its own sound, and because of that, I opened up a lot of weekends of my time, a lot of after hours of my time, and worked a lot more days off that should have been days off, that weren't, in a row, so that I could get it to sound the way that I wanted it to with the people that I wanted it to have work on it. As far as equipment stuff goes, I mean, I started dubbing anime when we were still chasing tape. You know, there was like a big beta machine that was connected to a computer, and you could just over there going back and forth, and everything would sync up, and you'd try to record, and you'd hope that you get it, because the process of stopping and resetting everything and trying again was like about a minute and 20 seconds. It's like forever. You know, most if not all places have gone digital now. We also use digital scripts. You know, we'll have it in there. If we need to change something, the actor doesn't have to have a pencil handy and scratch a bunch of crap out. We have it on hand. For people who can't see very well, like myself, I can blow the font up. Oh, great. You know, like there's all sorts of things to make the whole process easier. I start working within like quarter frames and tiny amounts of space, tiny amounts of movements, to where I think the on lines, the lines that are with lip flaps, look right. I usually, with my naked eye, I can see about 1/60th of a second difference if someone moves something, and that's a completely stupid skill. Like that, no one should have that skill. It's a silly skill, but it is something that I see, and that comes from years and years of working on it. So, I think overall, most people from 15 years ago to now put a lot more effort into it, take it a lot more seriously, and I think the results are positive.
Mm-hmm. How long would you say it takes to record a single episode? Do you have the voice actor come out to record? Are they recording the whole season at one time?
Typically, for Funimation, we will work on what's called a batch of episodes at once. A batch of episodes is usually anywhere from about 5 to 8 episodes. Typically, that number is 6, like what would fit on one disc, 6 or 7 episodes. Those are put into a batch where you work on all those at the same time, complete them entirely, and then move on to the next batch. On average, once the cast has been selected and you're in full production, I would say it's somewhere like 1.5 to 2 episodes a week by the time you average it all out, but you're not just turning in 1.5 to 2 episodes a week. That's like, you know, after several weeks, you turn in this many at the same time.
Out of all the characters that you've played the last many years, who's like one character that you can relate to the most and why?
Character that I can relate to the most and why? Probably Jean Havoc. Plays second fiddle to Travis Willingham a lot. Thinks he's quite suave with the ladies and is incredibly mistaken, but is overall a good guy and tries hard and is someone you can rely on. Yeah.
Do you prefer working on anime that are more comedic or more serious that have a more mature tone?
Strangely enough, for everything else that I do, I really like the dark, mature anime a lot more. I like funny material, and most of what I do on camera or on stage or whatever else that's not anime is comedic, and that might be why, is I have that outlet for that. So when I work in anime, I want it to be dark and gritty and sad, and people are crying, and there's so many feels. I just really enjoy that, which is, you know, another reason I enjoy the Hosoda films so much. They're just, you know, quiet and tender, and just work really well done. I enjoy the comedies too, but it just seems like overall I drift towards darker, more serious material.
When you're in charge of doing a dub, would you say that you're trying to make it its own thing, or are you trying to make it as close to the original dub as possible?
The goal, I think, the goal is to make it story-wise and emotional impact-wise as close to the Japanese as possible. I tend to also try to do some sort of somewhat of a tonal match. Like if this is a mother and she's about this old and whatever else and the Japanese sound like that, I try to get in that same ballpark and not just completely go off in left field with it. In some instances, it seems to play out better for a ensemble cast to not always do that. In the case of Titan, for instance, because we keep bringing it up because it's going to premiere tomorrow, the character of Armin, I went with a male voice actor instead of a female voice actor for multiple reasons, including the main one, which is the character grows up quickly on screen to the point where he's about ready to drive a car by episode 3 or 4. And for people who have watched the subtitled version, that's quite jarring for them. They're used to this effeminate voice carrying all the way through to the end of the series. But for the other characters around him and for everything else, it seemed to work out better to go ahead and go that route. So even if it doesn't necessarily sound like the Seiyu, a lot of thought was put into it and a lot of thought was, you know, on how the overall ensemble would sound. I try to, as I mentioned before, get the proper nouns right, get the names right, get the pronunciations right, so that, I guess the main goal would be so that if an English speaker could sit down with an interpreter and someone from Japan and they could talk about how much they love Attack on Titan or Evangelion or something like that and have conversations about the same scenes and the same characters and the same moments and they know what each other's talking about and it's not the script's not so different or the voices aren't so different that they can't relate, you know. That is the goal, that everyone enjoys the same show, no matter what language it's in.
Yes, so there's a lot of first-timer, or time voice actors in the Attack on Titan dub.
Uh-huh.
So in casting, how much do you try to seek out new actors versus sticking to the Funimation stable or in, like, everything?
Well, I try to hear new people all the time. I have been one of the main directors on the One Piece dub for a few years now, and that tends to be a good ground for finding new actors to work with. One, because there are just so many characters in One Piece. I mean, I say that, you know, Titan and Brotherhood have large ensemble casts. One Piece laughs at them and says that our ensemble cast can swallow theirs. Two, because there are so many characters that come on screen that just have one or two lines. And my time with that actor, I only have to get out this particular character for a couple of lines for them to hold the voice and hold the read and to get the job done. It's just a couple of lines. And then also, for One Piece, for lack of a better word, it's cartoonier than a lot of other things I work on. So people come in and want to do voice acting for the first time. Their tendency is to be big and crazy and cartoon. And at least I can let them do that with One Piece because that's pretty much what it is. So once they can get their skills through something like One Piece, I can use them in other projects. For Titan, there's a few people, as I mentioned before, this is either their first or one of their first times to work with Funimation. Doesn't necessarily mean they've never acted before. It's really rare for me to hire someone and that for me to be like their first acting job ever, because there are so many people out there who've had training and have an agent and have all sorts of other things going on for them. They're going to outshine someone who's never had any training, who's never had anything like that, that just has a will and a drive. Will and drive is important, but if you have that will and drive, you are going to get training. You're going to have experience. You're going to find some way to get this stuff done. In the case of Elizabeth Maxwell is one of my cast for Attack on Titan. She hasn't done any ADR work before, but she's worked in video games and she's done other acting. I think she's working on that Dusk Till Dawn show that's being shot in Austin right now. I think it's going on. Yeah. Something like that. She's done other on-camera work too, so this is just like her first ADR job. I always try to find new people. I'm the same way as a lot of the people out there that are listening. I'm like, oh, okay, it's this guy again. It's really hard for me to not associate his voice with this other show I love so much coming out of this guy's mouth and this guy's, you know, character design. I recognize that. I know that too. I'm not as harsh as some fans are. You know, that to me that'd be the same thing as like, oh, this Brad Pitt guy, I just saw him in some other movie. I totally can't buy him as this character. You know, it's ridiculous. He even looks like the same guy. Oh, you know. So I think some people are far more critical than what would be considered any sort of logic or any sort of fair criteria. But I do try to always farm and find new folks to work with and bring them on up to larger roles.
Cool. more recent role that I really enjoyed you, I've enjoyed your work on, going back to Hosa's work, was as Shota in Summer Wars.
Oh, cool. Thank you.
I really liked how you captured the jealousy the character had against Kenji.
Mm-hmm.
And I also really, really liked how you also showcased, I would say, the accidental stupidity that he had.
He does have that. Yeah.
So, another more of a mindset sort of question is, like, how did you capture such a character who was kind of, I don't want to say two-faced, but had such different dynamics between the jealous, stupid guy.
Right. Part of the reason I was involved with that particular character, as I explained to the producers when I was turning in my cast list, that was the one character in that movie that wasn't quite as calm-voiced, serious, same sort of approach as all the other characters. He was the comedic relief. He was broader. He was a little bit more ridiculous. He had a lot of more bizarre things going on. So I felt that, along with my voice being in a similar place with the Seiyus, I felt that it would be easier for me just to choose to do that than for me to try to explain to someone else, I know everyone else around you is being very, very serious and very whatever else. I need you to be a little bit more over the top than what they are. And with that, I still need you to be able to pull it back for me in these particular moments here and there, like the incident with the refrigeration and the ice, other sad moments here and there, and still be able to play up the ridiculous pseudo-incestuous crush that he has on his cousin. So, yeah, that was the reasoning behind that and the approach for that.
Well, I thought you did a very great job.
Thank you so much. I enjoyed that movie so much, and I enjoy that character. And that's one of those little milestones that I look back on. Like, I really, really enjoyed working on that, and I can watch this particular finished product over and over and over again and not get tired of it. I thought Brina and Center Nicholas just destroyed. They did great. Destroyed in the good way, killed it. Pam Doherty, Maxie Whitehead, I thought everyone just did such a fantastic job. And Patrick Seitz did a wonderful job adapting the script for that to bring those characters to life in English.
Absolutely.
Given that there is an announcement for Evangelion 4.0, and there's also an announcement for Mushishi second season, if Funimation gets it, because there's always that chance that it doesn't.
Sure, sure.
Are you going to approach it a little differently since time has passed between them, or do you think you're going to still approach them with the same mindset?
I will probably approach them for whatever the material has set forth. So if time has passed and characters are slightly older and slightly different, that's if by chance that Funimation gets it and I get to work on it and all the pieces fall in place, I will try to follow and adhere to what has already been set out. I know that has the new Mushishi already come out, or has it just been announced?
It's been announced.
It's been announced.
Came up
okay.
With an OVA like a couple weeks ago.
Okay.
The new season starts, I think, in a couple weeks.
And was it still Ginkgo?
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Well, then, I am also on record of saying, unless the character is way, way, way elderly now, that I still want Travis to be Ginkgo because I thought he was great.
It was from the art that he looks exactly the same.
Cool. So. Then hopefully Travis has time to do that because I thought he was fantastic in it.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Who's your favorite character in Titan, Full Metal, or overall everything
you've
worked on?
Wow, favorite character in all the shows that I've worked on? You mean like one out of all of them or one for each one?
One for Titan, one for Full Metal, and if that's not overall.
Let's see. For Full Metal, probably Alphonse. He's so sweet, and he's such a good boy. And never gives up and has a good heart. It's just a solid, good, pure, nice character without being like a Luke Skywalker whiny character. You know, like he's just a nice, nice boy. In Titan, I don't know who my favorite character is in Titan. They're all really cool. Armin has cool stuff that happens. Mikasa has cool stuff that happens. I really like Annie. I like Levi, who doesn't like the badass. He's cool. Yeah, that one's harder for me to pick. It's not as clear-cut in Titan. In Evangelion, it's hard for Shinji to be the favorite, huh? For the same whiny reasons that I listed for Luke Skywalker and whatever else. I think that character's awesome, and I think that Spike does a great job with him. I really enjoy Mari, just because I liked there being new blood in the franchise. Who else? That's covers three or four of the bigger ones there, yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Speaking of Alphonse, for younger characters, how do you go about deciding whether to cast an actual kid or teen or if you're going to cast an adult?
depends on whether or not any good kid actors come audition for me. In the case of Alphonse, Aaron Dismuke had already done a little work with Justin Cook on Fruits Basket and Yu Yu Hakusho. So he had proven that he could handle that type of work. He was very, very well read for being like 8 or 9 years old. I could have conversations with him. I'm like, wow, I was not as smart as you. He's a very well read kid who's now in college. He's not a kid anymore. He's driving and wrecking cars. There were a few kids that I hired recording Mushishi. And there were a few kids here and there that I've hired working on other things. It just hasn't happened as much. The recording schedule doesn't always necessarily allow for that sort of age range to work with a lot, unless you have a lot of evening time that you can kind of switch things around and work past when they get out of school and put in several hours worth of work. There are a couple of high school students now that I guess they're so far along in high school and have completed enough credits or whatever that they have like a 3 or 4 hour gap in the middle of their day, which I never had when I was in high school, and they can come work for us and then go back to school, which I think is pretty cool.
So I know that there are a lot of series that are coming out right now in from out of Japan. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how many you watch on your spare time. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious, is there a new anime out there that you yourself would like to be a part of as a voice actor or as a director?
I haven't seen one for this like upcoming season or anything that's like super new like that. The last one was Titan, where I was like, this is awesome. And even with Attack on Titan, it was more about, I'd heard so much about it, I'd had a couple of people ask me about it, and I was like, well, nothing's been decided yet, and I really don't know, and even if I did know, I probably couldn't tell you because I'd get in trouble. And I watched a couple of scenes from it. I was like, wow, that is graphic and awesome. And I checked with the producers and whatever else. I was like, you know, hey, just to throw it out there. If that starts heading down the pipe and you're thinking about who you'd like to do it, I would love to. But just letting you know. You know, just letting you know. Just kind of putting that out there. Do that with what you will. And I didn't sit down to watch it until they said, cool, we thought about it and we want you to do it. Because what I would hate, and the same reason that I haven't seen any new shows that you're mentioning right now, what I would hate is to watch something, fall totally in love with it, know kind of what I would want to do with it tonally, and et cetera, and then not get to do it. It'd break my little heart. So, and on top of that, the things that I am already working on, or that are coming down the pipe, whatever, take up so much of my time that I don't necessarily have time to continue watching other stuff. But the good part of that is I'm focusing so much on the current things that I'm trying to be very thorough about them, and I think they turn out better because of that. So
recently there's been a lot of limited edition boxes that have been coming out for Kamisama Kiss, Psychopaths, and Attack on Titan that have been announced. What has kind of brought on this change? Haven't really seen that a lot in the past.
I'm not sure, really. I know in the early to mid-2000s, Funimation did really cool boxes and extra things that came with it. I still have my first Full Metal Alchemist series with the metal tins that you put the four packs in. I still have all that stuff. And I like collector's editions like that. I still have my Beck that looks like it's in a guitar amplifier. I have my Basilisk that's in a wooden box, and it's really pretty and pristine. I think there was a time when the amount of money it costs to make that versus units sold versus who all is interested in just wanting the show the cheapest way possible, it didn't justify making those things. I think maybe some similar models, like maybe the Aniplex model or something like that, where they have a show and there's not a cheap version. There is the $3 million version. And having people buy that and like go, well, that's what we got. I think that has... maybe that was one of the things that Funimation took into account. Of like, you know, there are some folks out there who are willing to pay extra for having a whole bunch of cool stuff. That they love the show, they love the characters, and they're collectors. Like, I'm a collector. I like hard copies of things. My library is not a hard drive. My library is a thing that you can go up and pull one out, and here is this show, or here is this CD, or here is this. I like that stuff. I like to have hard copies of things. that there, I guess there might be a resurgence of that interest, just like there's a similar resurgence in vinyl. All of a sudden, vinyl's outselling CDs and MP3s percentage-wise, number of units made versus number of units sold. I think that had something to do with it, was maybe that Aniplex model of, you know, we will still offer this really cheap, inexpensive way to get the show, and here's a middle one, and here's another one, and here is the super-duper way that you can get the show. And it could also be things like the Avengers box set. Like, the other things do that, too. Like, here's the least expensive way of doing it. Here's another way, and here's the, if you really want everything, we've got it. You know, like, it could be that those models have been successful, too, and Funimation just took enough from that.
Do you think Netflix and Sync streaming has had an effect on anime popularity lately?
I think that it has. I think, as a, for instance, for Attack on Titan, I could be wrong, but I'd be willing to bet that as far as a show that was released in Japan that up until tomorrow is available subtitled only, that is probably the most viewed new show to come out in a couple of years. And it may be the most viewed show subtitled, unavailable dub-wise, like, ever. I could be wrong in that, but, like, if it's up on Netflix, Hulu, and a few other places, that just makes it so easy for anyone just to pop it on legally, all above the board, and check it out. I also think that it is a good way for a lot of folks who may not want to go out and buy it to check things out. It's a great way to do that. You know, I do that with films, too. I don't want to necessarily buy this documentary, but I want to watch it once. I may want to see some new filmmaker's earlier work, but I don't want to go throw $20-$30 down for it. I just want to check it out and see where they came from. I think anime is in a similar place with a lot of that. Some people, you know, may have a curiosity about it, but not enough to put a financial burden on themselves to start down the path that we've all been on that costs a lot of money.
Yeah, so as far as, like, access to anime, you have the Netflix and the Hulus, uh-huh. And also the past couple of years, Toonami's come back. So so we know that, like a lot of TV deals have, like, phased out in favor of streaming deals. So, but like, I'm wondering, like, how do you compare as far as influence and getting in the mainstream audience? And
like has Toonami helped? Is that what you mean?
Yeah. Like, how does TV help versus how does streaming help?
I don't have all of those numbers. I do know that it seems like if there's an event, like this show comes on at this time, like the Space Dandy premieres at 10:30, I feel like that generates a lot more buzz, a lot more people talking about it, a lot more forum posts, a lot more tweets than maybe, say, like throwing up all of House of Cards up at one time. People talk about it right when it comes out or whatever, and they're still interested in it, and obviously that show's great and won a bunch of awards or whatever else. But as far as an ongoing, continued interest that other people might go, what is this thing I keep hearing about every Saturday? Everyone's going, you know, crazy over the Space Dandy thing. I think that having an event like that does generate a lot of interest in it. I think a lot of people can check things out on Netflix and Hulu and on Funimation.com and wherever else they'd like to look. I think the instance of it having a specific time slot on a network where where everyone can tune into it at the same time, much like watching a sporting event. Everyone wants to watch the game tonight or wants to watch the Super Bowl or something. There's something about having a lot of people all over the place, not even necessarily right where you are. There's an excitement about watching it all at the same time and knowing that it's kind of a global event that I think something like Toonami or something that may have something over some of the streaming possibilities. Thank you, guys.
Unfortunately, Mike McFarlane had a moment to answer one more question that I had, the one that I ask all of the voice actors I get to chat with. So here we go with his rendition of Three Character Island.
If you were stuck on a deserted island, mm-hmm. which three characters that you have portrayed in the past would you like to have beside you to keep you sane and to your imminent rescue?
Oh my God.
And why?
Master Roshi, Ranka Fujioka, and Havoc, because they represent three different types of getting the job done and maintaining sanity while still having a little bit of comedy about them to keep life interesting.
Great answer. Thank you very much.